Okay, and I'm going to put folks on mute. Okay, good morning. It's Henry Harris. It is September 20th, and this is another installment of the weekly Emunah teleconference, fresh off of the freshening process of Baruch Hashem, a Yom Kippur experience, looking with anticipation towards Sukkos. I'm excited to share with you something that has come together for me just in these last couple of days with greater clarity and insight, and that is an insight into Sukkos, and in particular, the kind of the flow from Yom Kippur to Sukkos. I just want to mention that for technically, I actually listened to a recording the other day of one of these talks, and I noticed that the mic, the recording sound is not great. If people are hearing that it's loud or just staticky, or please let me know. I want to do something about that if the quality is not, either the live or the recorded version is not great. So so here's something that struck me that I just found, it's just profound. You know, some of you might have seen, I've referred in the past to a video that was a tremendous metaphor for the nature of thought and how we can become fooled by thought and into thinking that there's an outside-in reality as opposed to an inside-out exclusively. And that's the video of there's a series of clips of young children, like toddlers, a year, 15 months, two years old, etc., who encounter their shadow. They're walking along outside, and there it's a sunny day, and all of a sudden they look down and they notice there's this distinct shape, a darkened shape that is, you know, nearby. And when they move, it moves, and it startles them. And the reactions, in a couple of cases, the reactions are kind of like humor and delight. In many of the cases, the reaction is real fear, you know, like real fear at the presence of this dark, distinctive shape moving along with them. And so in some cases the toddlers, like, they freeze or they start crying, and it's obvious that they're reacting to the presence of their own shadow. And you know, it's such a powerful muscle, because what we're understanding is that, you know, the world that we are living in is an experience, we're having an experience of divine thought. And as we've discussed many times, part of Emunah is to understand the world in which this conversation about Emunah to me has less to do with acquiring or grasping intellectually or integrating in an active sense. It of course those things are good, but the focus that I'm seeing for myself is understanding Emunah in the sense of understanding what's already happening, how the Almighty is already operating in the world that's independent of my doing or seeing, it coming to recognize that He is running this world in a way that it behooves me to see and consider, like gravity, you know, like the reality of gravity is not something that I need to get good at. It's a matter of seeing it from my seeing the truth that it's operating on its own. It's a truth. It's not personal.
I'm sorry to interrupt. Is it possible to speak a little louder? On my phone, it's a little low.
Oh, sure. Is this better?
Yeah, for me, yes.
I'm speaking. Okay, fine. I hope that it's not too. I hope the recording is okay. Well, thank you for letting me know. So I'm going to keep it here. So the shadow, to me, is such a beautiful metaphor that children can get frightened of it, that they don't understand the reality that we're having an experience that looks like it's somehow an independent and separate reality that could be dealt with, that should be dealt with. What is this toddler, you know, as he's frightened by his own shadow, what's he thinking? He's thinking this is a real thing, and I have to somehow get away from it, get it to stop. You know, he has to do something to and with the shadow, and obviously it's a mistake. So here's what I was struck by. At first, I was struck by the fact that a shadow is a rich idea in Jewish teachings, and in fact, we're going into the holiday of Sukkot shortly, and the essence of the schach is that it provides shade. It provides a shadow, basically, right? It's sila de mehemnusa. It's the shadow of faith. It's the shadow of emuna. In fact, one of the ways the Gemara understands is the defining characteristic of schach. Why is it? What makes schach effective and kosher as schach is that it casts a shadow on the space below it. That is the Gemara's discussion about one of the defining characteristics of how do we know a schach what's the measure of a schach being a kosher schach or not, is that it casts a shadow on the space below. So I was like, well, what is that? You know, I was just curious about that. And then I remember a pasuk that says in Tehillim, it says, Hashem shomrecha, Hashem is your guardian, Hashem tzilcha al yad yiminecha, he's your shadow, by your right side. So that was like, okay, what is it mean that Hashem is our shadow? That the shade, that the schach is kosher. It's called the shadow of belief, of emuna. Like, what is that about? What is the nature of shadow? And how is it that a child, like the metaphor of this idea of the child becoming frightened by his own shadow, how does that work in terms of understanding something deeper? And here's what kind of came together from Yom Kippur. You know, Yom Kippur, we read about the two Seirim. There's two goats that are identical. And the Kohen Gadol prepares like a lottery, like two pieces of paper. On one it reads La Hashem, and the other it reads La Azazel. Two goats are designated to be offered, one to God in the Avoda of the Beis HaMikdash, inside the Beis HaMikdash, and the other one is sent out to the wilderness and it's thrown off a cliff to Azazel. And so the Kohen Gadol writes those two words on pieces of paper, and then he reaches his hand into a space where he doesn't see which is which, and he pulls one out, and one is one, whatever it says, the first goat up is getting that piece of paper, the second goat up is getting the other one. So it's kind of it's a little bit strange, especially when you look at the verse that introduces the idea of the Azazel, because it says like this, it says, and V'nosan Aaron al Shnei HaSeirim Gorobos, Aaron will place upon the two goats these lots, Goral echad la Hashem, v'goral echad la Azazel. One lot is for God, and one lot is for Azazel. So at first glance, to me, that strikes me as weird, because when you put a reference to two offerings, and one is to Hashem, and one is to Azazel, or anything other than Hashem for that matter, it just strikes me as odd that there should be, in contrast to Hashem, an offering brought to anything. Right, like there's Hashem and then there's Azazel. That seems strange. But then the verse continues a couple of verses later. It says, "Vahasir asher alav ala hagora Azazel," and the goat upon which the lot came up for Azazel, Yamad chai lifnei Hashem. It shall stand alive before Hashem. So the whole thing is qualified because the Torah tells us that the offering to Azazel is happening lifnei Hashem. That's the context, even though it seems like it's almost like we're setting it aside as an offering, there's for Hashem and there's for something other than Hashem. Truth be told, even the offering that's for Azazel is happening lifnei Hashem. And to me, that's the essence of the Yom Kippur. Like the deep clarification of Yom Kippur, or one of the opportunities of Yom Kippur in terms of doing tshuva, you know, we make the mistake of getting lost in the enticement of the Yetzer, and it looks to us like a compelling and almost no alternative to, you know, in the moment we're making the mistake. It, to me at least, it doesn't feel like I have a choice. You know, that's, and of course that's part of the mistake, is the misunderstanding that the world could actually be that way, that there could be a separate reality in which I have no, you know, that's distinct from Hashem, that is powerful and that compels me. That's part of the mistake, and part of the Yom Kippur process, the deep tshuva of Yom Kippur, is the realization that even the Yetzer Hara is not a separate entity. Like, that's the whole psychology of compulsions and bad habits and all of that stuff is the perception that there is a force within me that is real, that is somehow powerful. It's somehow powerful and can command me. It's separate, it's distinct, and it has power over me. And the clarity and the courage to kind of face it and acknowledge it's painful, but it's not really separate from the Almighty, and I can wait it out. I can stand and play in my place. That's part of the deep opportunity of Yom Kippur, that realization that Azazel, on the one hand, it looks as if it's a separate thing, but really it's Lifnei Hashem. That is the opportunity of Yom Kippur. So now look at this transition from Yom Kippur to Sukkot. It's Sukkot is after having given, you know, the challenge of Yom Kippur is facing those places of darkness in our lives, those experiences where again, I'm speaking for myself, where I feel so compelled, I feel the insecurity so powerful, it just feels so compelling, and yet I kind of somehow know on a deeper level that there isn't an independent reality than God. And it has to be that this is also from Hashem, and it doesn't have direct power over me. It's frightening, it's uncomfortable, but somehow I have the openness. You know, there's a yashrus inside of me coupled with my free will. There's a straightforward desire to go to wisdom. There's also that works in conjunction with my free will, the gift of free will, that I can look in the direction of the Almighty, and that there's nothing other than the Almighty, and I can accept responsibility for my engagement with that, you know, with that dark, with that Yetzer Hara presence, that insecure voice. So there's a tremendous opportunity and avoda of Yom Kippur where there's courage involved. And on the other side of Yom Kippur, there's an opportunity for a deeper clarity, a deeper understanding of just how true it is that there is no separate. There is no separate reality. You know, the Yetzer, the Seir La'Azazel is Lifnei Hashem. It's all before the Almighty. And what is that? And how do I see that reflected in the Tzila de Mehanusa, the shadow of faith, the shadow of Emuna that is the whole essence of the Schach. You know, the shadows that show up in our life are, you know, like this kid, you know, like this kid who's frightened of his own shadow. It's a misunderstanding. It's a misunderstanding that the shadow is somehow a real entity that could be and should be avoided or neutralized. That's the shadow that a child becomes frightened by. And that's the shadows that we become frightened by. You know, I've shared in the past how, you know, I've spoken with people who deal with anxiety, you know, and that feeling of anxiety is gripping and frightening, and it just seems like there's something abnormal. Like this person who I was working with was describing how, like, people who I talk to about, you know, like, it's not normal. My feelings and fears, the thoughts that come to my mind are not normal. What's wrong with me? You know, other people don't have these fears. What should I do about this anxiety? It's, you know, it's really gripping me. Well, the truth is the first, as we've, you know, we're coming back to, is that, and this is the conversation really on every week to me, is a deepening understanding that there is only one source, there's only one power behind everything, and our psychological experience is not different. Our capacity for peaceful, thoughtful, broad-minded, and trusting psychological experience is a gift from the Almighty. Our experience of insecure and fearful thinking is also a gift in the sense that it's from the Almighty, it's part of His wisdom, and it can show up as a frightening and separate reality that we should deal with. You know, it shows that's the shadow. And the shadow that is cast in this world, it's all from the Almighty. It's all from the, so to speak, the mashal of the sun, who is the source of light. So the opportunity of the tzila de mehemnusa, the opportunity of the shadow of the sukkah is the opportunity to rejoice, you know, to have gratitude and a sense of like think about of the joy. Not that we always feel this, and even on Sukkot we might not feel it, but we know that such joy is possible. The opportunity for such joy is possible to really know that Hashem Shemrecha, Hashem Tzilcha, Al Yad Minecha, Hashem is your guardian. He's also your shadow. Like he is providing. He is your shadow in the sense that there's no separateness. There's nothing separate from you other than the Almighty. Right? There's no separate reality. He is your shadow. He's the one who's kind of, you know, I don't know how to articulate that in a different way. But I guess the point is that, you know, another example is someone who is struggling deeply with a conflict, a family conflict, that a member of her family had cut himself off from the family, and it was so devastating, and it just felt so clear that this person's actions were sourcing directly the pain. And of course, it's an assignment. I'm not suggesting that, to, you know, for a member of one's family to say, I'm hereby cutting off contact from you. I'm not suggesting that that's not an assignment and that it's not normal to feel pain there. But the healing process begins with understanding that it's a shadow. The feeling that a person experiences in the face of a family member doing something like that, the feeling experience that a person has in the face of a financial hardship, but whatever it is, that feeling is a shadow. The Almighty is showing up in the form of thought in our experience of life. And of course it's normal and human to become frightened by shadows. But there's a deeper opportunity in seeing that obviously a shadow, it's a misunderstanding, right? We look at these children who are frightened by their shadows, and we see that there's something deep that they can see that they haven't seen yet. And of course, at a certain point, you know, when they're 3 or 5 or 7 or whatever age it is, they're not going to feel that way. There's going to be a normal human process whereby they're not going to be frightened by their shadows. We can trust in our own experience, and we can trust in the experience of others, that the truth is that shadows don't have the power to frighten us or to cause us harm. And we can know something true about our experience even as it feels painful. You know, even as it feels frightening. I guess to me that's, you know, going back to the metaphor or the idea of the Ir Miklat, you know, the city of refuge. The truth is liberating. The truth will set us free, as has been said. You know, the truth will set you free. It doesn't mean that in this moment it will manipulate your experience by knowing it. But it will lead you to a path of freedom. It itself is freedom. You know, it's clarity. So the opportunity of you know, so the whole shadow of the say of the schach is this reminder that everything in this world is a shadow cast by the Almighty. It's just shadows, and then we have the opportunity to relate to it and to engage it, knowing something deeper about it. So I want to pause and check in and see, does that resonate? You know, does that make sense? You see an opportunity there, or you have a reflection about your own experience or a question? The floor is open. Okay. Feel free to interrupt me if you change your mind. So, you know, I wrote about recently, perhaps some of you read the recent blog I published about an encounter that happened on just this last Friday night, just a number of days ago, where one of my kids was struggling in his own way with his insecure thought, and it was showing up with some inappropriate behavior and some kind of antisocial behavior. And I got frustrated and reactive to him, you know. And then my behavior triggered my wife, who, you know, felt threatened and, you know, somewhat reactive to my reactivity. So we were like quite a, you know, we were quite a trio. And so, you know, so I became angry with my son, and my wife kind of, you know, did something that I felt was, you know, in a moment I was quite bothered by that she did in the presence of my other kids. And I was stewing, you know, over the course of the next 24 hours, I was upset. I was like frustrated, you know, and I went through a number of stages. The first stage was, this is really not right. You know, he is not allowed, and it's not good for him to speak and act in this way. And it's not changing. And I'm responsible to help him, and I'm failing in my task. Like, it felt threatening that he was not, you know, that he was behaving in the way he was. It really felt threatening to me. And then simultaneously, that my wife seemed to be acting at odds with, you know, with my efforts to help him. That only compounded my feeling of, like, not only am I not succeeding in helping my son, but I'm working at odds with my partner, and, you know, how is this ever going to change? And so I really felt, you know, I felt upset and kind of, you know, like I felt like I was being victimized by these dual circumstances. And it just really felt to me that my, you know, here's the anatomy of my experience. The upset and angry feelings I was feeling were very, very clearly to me coming from my son and my wife. His inability or unwillingness to listen and respond to my input, and her unwillingness to kind of share a reasonable approach, or, you know, at least not to undermine my approach, it just felt very clear, you know. And that to me would be a shadow, you know, that would be the shadow of a that would be the two-year-old looking at a shadow and becoming frightened, you know, really feeling like there's that thing is real, it's a distinct and dark shape, and I don't know how to get away from it. Because it's not, again, it's not to say that there weren't things to deal with, my child's behavior, my wife and I not being on the same page, it's not like there aren't things to deal with. But the presence of that fear is, to the extent that I perceive it to be coming from my child and wife, and that's the misunderstanding. That's the fear that is the fear of a shadow. You know, it's not. It's not coming from them. It's coming through the experience of insecure thought. That's the only place it can come from, you know. And I can experience insecure thought in the presence of a circumstance that might need a intervention, but the insecure thought and the fearfulness is a sign that I'm not in a headspace. It's telling me something about my vision. It's not. I don't have access to a clear perspective of my child and my wife and our parenting and et cetera. I don't. It's just, you know, it's a shadow. I'm frightened by a shadow. And then at some point, what changed was my acknowledgement, okay, it can't be that it's coming from them. You know, at a certain point, the thought arose that said, what do you know? You know, what do you know about what's true? What do you know about what cannot be true? And I sat with that, you know. It can't be true that he's directly sourcing my upset feelings, or that, you know, her seeing or not seeing my perspective is sourcing my, it can't. It feels pretty darn like it that it is, but I know something about that. And then there was still a tinge of upset. You know, there was still a grasping for rationalization that said, but, you know, it's not right that they're doing what they're doing. Like, it's not fair. You know, it's true that they're not the source, but they're making an asylum. Like, there's still that I've seen that's a common refrain in my process, that I go from, you know, clarity to lack of clarity to more clarity. There's still I know that it's true that there's that people and things can't source my feelings, but boy, they're definitely making an asylum, and they're testing me, and that's not fair. And then at a later stage, the message, the insight was, it was something to the effect of, they're not to blame. They're really not to blame. It really is true that I'm experiencing insecure thought. And, you know, what do I want? You know, I want to live in, I want to live in reality. You know, what is reality? Reality is that there's only one moment, and there's only one way in which reality is showing up. I want reality. I don't want my cheshbonos. I don't want my calculations and depictions of the world. I mean, I want to exercise responsibility to the best of my ability, but I don't, where I see and feel that there's anger, where I see and feel that there's fear, I can acknowledge that I'm just not, it's just not serving me well. My calculations, my thought is not serving me well. And I'm interested in stepping back from that. You know, I don't know enough to say what my wife and child are doing right now in a clear way. I have an interest in something other than my perception in this moment. You know, like what the Gemara says, that anyone who becomes angry is if he's worshiping idolatry. It's a sign of falsehood. It's a sign of disconnection from reality. And I want reality. You know, I really want reality, and I don't have access to it independently. It's really, really the case that I can't grasp it on my own. I need help. In this, and there's only one way, in one way in one moment it shows, and then that's, you know, as a gift. So I was, you know, I kind of, it occurred to me like to let go, you know, like I really don't know what they're contributing to this experience. I know I'm experiencing insecure thought. And that led way to an understanding that, you know, I'm embarrassed. I'm sorry. The feeling that came to me was, you know, I'm not proud of the experience I'm having right now, of that upset that I gave into, but I'm also not ashamed of it. Like, it's not embarrassing. It's human. You know, it really is human that a person is visited by insecure thought and loses sight of that. It's human that we experience shadow play in our lives, and we misunderstand the shadows to be things to grapple with. And what am I, you know, that's human. And I'm not too ashamed to accept responsibility for that and then go and, you know, apologize, you know, and be clear what I'm apologizing for, my contribution to a conflict. I'm apologizing for the entirety. I mean, I'm not relinquishing an expectation or a desire for certain behaviors from my child or, you know, certain things from my wife, but I don't attribute my upset feelings and my anger and all that, and my hurt. It just doesn't make sense to attribute that to them. So I'm free to relate to it as a divine process, and I can accept responsibility for how that divine process shows up in me and how I act with it. And I trust, you know, that it's, you know, as I've the metaphor that it's just so meaningful to me is the birth metaphor. I don't have the ability to stop contractions. I'm here to give birth to new life. the main children of a person in this world are not his physical, biological children. They're his good choices. And that metaphor that birthing is the main children, the main things that we birth in this world are good choices, means that we're going to be subject to contractions and dilations. And I don't need to resent the presence of contractions in my life. They're part of a process that is profoundly beautiful. The Almighty sends upon me contractions. He sends shadows. All experience is through the gift of thought that He plants in my heart that shows up. And then I have this ability to gain consciousness, to gain awareness of the flow of that thinking in my world. And it's the embarrassment of those thoughts that is in some ways symptomatic of a misunderstanding. Like I the feeling of shame associated with anger, you know, is symptomatic of the misunderstanding, that it's personal, that it's somehow reflective of me, of my failing. Of course, there is a failing. I'm not saying there isn't. You know, when I give into and I run after insecure thought, it's not to say that it's a success or it's you know, there is some kind of a mistake. I'm in need of a tikkun. I'm in need of doing tshuva. But part of the tshuva is the realization that it's a job. It's a job. It's not an accusation. You know, you have a job in this world, and it's a deepening understanding. It's the opportunity to see more deeply the impersonal quality of insecure thought and how we lose sight of it and how we get fooled by it. And then it's a gift, you know, and then when we see that, it's a blessing, you know. There's a gratitude and a realization, an opportunity for a realization that I needn't, you know. It's an opportunity for a deeper appreciation that there's more contractions to come and they're not a problem. I don't, you know, I can see more deeply that there's more coming. And again, that's to me the opportunity of, you know, of the tzila de mehemnusa, the shadow of faith, that, you know, that everything is shadows of the Almighty. There's nothing, the shadows is all a reflection. It's all powered by the sun. You know, it's all powered by the Almighty. And I'm capable of losing track of that. I'm capable of, just like those two-year-olds, I get frightened by shadows. And guess what? Sukkos is the joy of understanding that those shadows are never anything other than divine thought. And, you know, I don't know how to, I'm not sure how to transmit this message in a way that I know how to instill it in the hearts of others, to impart it to my child or my wife or even myself for that matter. Like, you know, I'm in this moment as I'm speaking right now, I feel a calm and I feel great. Hello? Feel free to interrupt if you'd like. In this moment, I feel a certain calm and peacefulness, but I can assure you that, you know, 5 days ago or whenever it was that I was stewing in my anger, I was not calm and happy. I was agitated. But it was such a, you know, but when I went to apologize to my son and to my wife for my contribution to the conflict, and I was truly sincere, It was so helpful. Like it was, my son was shocked by it. You know, like he was like, I could see that he was, something registered, something that was taken, he was taken back by it. And he said to me, you know, that means a lot to me, Tom. It's not like I've therefore seen, you know, like it remains to be seen what unfolds and what happens. But that opportunity to see it and then acknowledge it, it was a deepening experience for me. And I trust for him. And when I went to apologize to my wife, it was a deepening experience for me. And I trust for her. The recognition that the gift that I saw, that there's room in our relationship for insecure thought. There's room for me to become frightened and reactive. And I'm accepting responsibility for that. Like, I want you to know I'm on board with the fact that it's not you. When I feel adversarial to you, I'm on board with the fact that that's me and it's not you. And I could very well make that mistake again, but I just want you to know I don't want to go there. I ask the Almighty to help me to avoid going there. I trust in what the Gemara says, that the person who comes, one who comes to purify himself, the Almighty promises him help. There's something I trust is helpful to me and to our relationship when I see that and I acknowledge that. I don't know how, you know, there are times where I'm like, well, how do I get my kid to see this? You know, I don't know how to do that except by standing in the truth to the best of my ability. That's what feels right to me. That's what feels true and meaningful in terms of making a difference, you know. In terms of being of help to my son, I'm left with the best strategy I have is to know and look for truth from the inside out. And his capacity, because he was made by God to seek and desire truth as well, it will resonate with him in a way that he might not even be conscious of. You know, it will resonate with him on a level that's deeper than personal thought. But it will, because his nature is to desire that truth. And so that's my best effort and strategy in anything, is to look for and desire that truth. And there's new things on the horizon. I wouldn't say that my relationship there's still uncertainties and insecurities that pop up in those same relationships. Except that I'm somewhat more aware of the possibility of insecurities. Like, in other words, there's room in the world that the Almighty runs for the Azazel. It's before Hashem. You know, it's not separate from Hashem. And it's there. It's not going anywhere. Every Yom Kippur, we're going to bring an offering, Lazazel, before Hashem. Yitzhar is not going anywhere. The possibility of insecure thought is not going anywhere. It's just that I'm gaining understanding about the reality that moment to moment to moment, there's a possibility of understanding something about that insecure, that source of thought that's insecure. It's the Almighty. I'm not going to vanquish insecure thought, at least in a way that I understand it to be vanquished. You know, he lifts my perception. Like, there's no question, when I look back, I can see that there are things today I can see that my reactivity is shifting, that there's more equilibrium. There's things that I can see that. That's clear to me, and it just reassures me that this is the best effort to make is Shivisi Hashem Lenegdi Tami, the realization of knowing what's true at all times. That's the beginning of all good effort. The beginning of all good effort. I have what to do in terms of parenting. I have what to do in terms of being a husband. There's what to do in the area of Hishtabas. But the first effort to make is to know what's true, to know what cannot be true. to know how my experience is being created and what's sourcing my experience. You know, that's what allows me, it's true, and it's what allows me to align with the ashras within me, you know, not to run after my own calculations, which estrange me from that beautiful and simple nature. You know, that's the way to navigate our lives. We're never going to vanquish in this life, at least as far as I can tell. We're never going to vanquish the perception, the possibility of insecure thought and all of that it could bring in its wake. But we can see and distinguish the truth of this moment. We have every one of us who's listening to this call has seen and distinguished the gift of this moment. Any thoughts or questions on what we're talking about? Okay. I just want to take a moment to wish everyone a beautiful Yom Tov and the opportunity of seeing with greater clarity the shadows that are cast in our lives as we step into the Tzilah de Mehemnusa. I want to remind folks that next Thursday, which is Chol HaMoed Sukkos, I won't be doing the Muna teleconference, but in the Thursday after, we'll be back on. And I want to encourage folks to, if you're not comfortable commenting or raising questions on the live call, whether you're listening on the live call or whether you're listening to the recording, I certainly welcome comments and questions that you can email me, and I don't need to mention who authors them. You can email me at info@jewishcenterforwellbeing.com. Or you can leave a message by voicemail at 845-393-1529. Again, 845-393-1529. And that's it. We'll stop the recording.